You're listening to The Stressless Life with Dr. Yip, the podcast about conquering your fears and overcoming anxiety. Our question for the day is, why are the teens of today so anxious? I am your host, Dr. Noah Larracy. Let's say hello to Dr. Yip.
Hello, Noah.
Dr. Yip is a licensed psychologist who's board certified in behavioral cognitive therapy and an expert in the treatment of anxiety and OCD. So it's been a while since the end of season two, but here we are in season three. So welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
And I know we have a lot of very, very exciting things coming up. We have some really cool guests booked that we don't want to jinx by mentioning, but I think it's going to be the best season yet. So I'm excited. What we're going to talk about today is teen anxiety. And this is something that we get asked about a lot by parents that come here. And they also want to know, why is my teen so anxious? And there was an article in the New York Times this past October called "Why Are More American Teenagers Than Ever Suffering from Severe Anxiety?" That sort of covered this whole issue. And I thought this would be a great thing for us to discuss. So the first question I have for you is, are the teens of today more anxious than ever?
Well, I think that is $1 million question because according to statistics, anxiety disorders is the most common mental health illness amongst youths and adults. So then that begs the question, well, are there actually more people suffering from anxiety disorder today? Or is it just that we are more aware about what anxiety disorder entails and what it looks like, and we're better at identifying anxiety disorders?
So this is the age-old question. Is it just that the detection methods have gotten more accurate, so therefore people find them more, or are they actually greater prevalence in the population?
Right, absolutely. With the increased use off the internet and the increased availability of information on the internet, patients and parents and other family members are able to search the symptoms online, and they're better savvy consumers who are able to understand, oh, well, this sounds like anxiety, as opposed to 20, 30 years ago where this option might not have been available.
So I want to quote from the article, which was written by Benoit Denizet-Lewis, and he writes, "Over the last decade, anxiety has overtaken depression as the most common reason college students seek counseling services. In its annual survey of students, the American College Health Association found a significant increase to 62% in 2016 from 50% in 2011 of undergraduates reporting overwhelming anxiety in the previous year." That's overwhelming anxiety.
I don't doubt those statistics at all. In fact, those stats might even be an underrepresentation because statistics come from people who come forth with information. That's the only way that we can get numbers and prevalence rates. However, there are so many people even today still suffering in silent, whether it's because they are unaware of what is happening to them or they fear shame and negative stigma and judgment from experience a mental health issue. So those numbers are probably still an underrepresentation, which is scary.
One of the things I think the article does well is it points out that anxiety, at least in this case, is more prevalent amongst privileged youths, and as they are the most emotionally distressed young people in America, as opposed to the underprivileged youths. Anxiety for them is probably much more understandable given that they maybe lack the resources or the opportunities, where in the other case, they actually have maybe a surplus of opportunities.
I am smiling right now because, yes, that seems so absurd, right? That if you look at children in third world countries where there would be so many reasons to experience anxiety, their levels of distress and anxiety and discomfort is actually lower than in privileged societies as what we have in the US. And in fact, even the happiness levels, which I don't even know what that means, however, the happiness levels are much higher in third world countries than they are here in the US. So that discrepancy really illustrates that there is a huge issue at what we are modeling for our youths, what we are teaching them, and how we are actually weakening this generation.
Let's get into some of the reasons why teens today might be more anxious.
Well, I think there are multiple factors that can contribute to a person's experience of more anxiety. First, I want to reiterate that anxiety is our subjective experience, right? What's actually happening is your body's fight or flight response that is increased, and which is your body's alarm mechanism telling you to respond to a danger. However, in our society today, the danger level isn't as heightened as someone in a third world country. So when they experience a real danger, well, their experience of anxiety is actually justified. Our youths in privileged societies in the US might experience dangers such as finals week, taking a pop quiz. Does my neighbor like me? Am I going to play well at the team sport this Friday? Are people laughing at me? Those are the dangers that our youths are experiencing today.
But as we know about anxiety, they can subjectively be suffering just as much as someone who might be in a third world country, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Again, because it's subjective, your experience is completely valid. Your experience may also be excessive. However, it's valid because we have to understand that when you experience anxiety, it's not just your perceived threat. It's also your confidence in your ability to overcome that threat. It's about your resiliency factor. Do you feel, or are you resilient enough where even despite this potential threat, you have the strength to overcome it? Maybe what's really lacking is the resiliency factor in our youths today. Because if the threat level is not any higher than what it was 10, 15, 20, 50 years ago, why is it that our youths today are experiencing more and more anxiety?
Could it be that they have an expectation that things are going to go really well for them, and then when there's any sign that it's not, they go in panic? And maybe in previous generations, people just didn't expect things to go that great all the time.
I think that's definitely another contributing factor. It's how, again, you expect yourself and your world to perform. So when you bring that up, what that signifies to me is that there is a problem in how our children are experiencing their world growing up. If they are feeling like, I don't have what it takes to overcome this barrier, or I don't expect this to go well because I don't have what it takes, then you wonder what happened. How did they come to this conclusion? What information did they get? Who were they observing when they were growing up? Who are their role models? And again, your expectations of yourself and your world determines what your security level is about yourself and the world. If you have high expectations of yourself that are appropriate and reachable and realistic, then that's probably a better buffer than someone who doesn't have that expectations of their own ability. However, same thing. What are your expectations of the future, of the world? If you expect that the world will fall into place, then that's probably a realistic perception. If we look at Aaron Beck's cognitive triad, which is basically the three factors that influence depression and anxiety, the three cognitive triad is about your perception of yourself, your perception of the future, and your perception of the world and the environment. And if any one of those are lacking, then that will be a risk factor to experiencing anxiety or depression.
So which of the three is the factor here with the teens?
Probably all three, to be honest with you. If you think about how our children are growing up today, they have unrealistic expectations of themselves, right? They expect to be able to perform at college levels when they are only in middle school or when they're only in high school. Myself, as a parent right now, I'm looking at preschools and what preschools would be appropriate for my children's personalities and their abilities. And preschools today serve as kindergarten back in the day, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Grade schools and kindergartens want children and will accept children who are actually ready emotionally. And the purpose of preschool is to prepare them for that. When children go into kindergarten, they're expected to know their ABCs. They're expected to know their 1-2-3s. Which is not the same as what we experienced growing up. I don't remember having to know my alphabets or the numbers before kindergarten, and kids, they are expected that. Does that mean that maybe our expectations of our children are unrealistic and it's actually adding more pressure onto them? So if we have these unrealistic expectations of our kids today, of course, they're going to have the same unrealistic expectations of themselves because we are their role models and they only learn from what they see and what they experience with the world.
So what are the other two parts of the cognitive triad you're referring to?
The other two is our expectations of the future as well as our expectations of the world and our environment. So let's talk about our world and our environment. The youths today, time and time again, is demonstrating that their expectations of their world and their environment is very unrealistic. They have expectations that the world will accommodate to their needs. The world will accommodate to their feelings. And that is unrealistic because that's not what really happens in the real world. The real world doesn't care what you feel. The real world doesn't care what you think. The real world expects you to be able to perform. So when you have kids who expect this unrealistically of their world, that discrepancy will also be a risk factor to anxiety and depression. Now, we can look at how kids today come to that conclusion that they expect the world to accommodate them. And, you know, there's that book, iGen, which brilliantly illustrate and review how our young adults today have become this entitled generation where they feel like that the world should accommodate to their needs and their feelings. And, you know, the reality is when we bring children up in this world, we have to provide them with experiences that will increase their resiliency, increase their strength, allow them to tackle obstacles in the world, allow them to fail and overcome their failures. Because if we do that, then the kids will have the experience under the belt of what to do the next time around. How do I overcome this challenge? How do I problem solve that situation? Instead, today we have too many parents, we call them helicopter parents, who are interfering with our children's learning experience. Not only do we have parents who are doing that, we also have schools who are doing that. And that was very evident in the article from the New York Times. That if a child comes in and isn't able to go to school, then the schools will give them specific accommodations to escape their discomfort levels, just so that they will show up at school. And the reality is, even if a child is able to come to school, if I'm coming to school, yet there are different expectations of me to perform, my confidence level in myself will not be the same as if I perform at the expectation that everybody else has. So again, it's about what are the expectations that we have of our kids? Do we expect them to be able to meet the challenges of the world? If we do and we believe in their capabilities, then let them do it. Why protect them when they can learn to protect themselves? Now, that's not to mean don't ever protect your children. Of course, as parents, that's our innate role to protect our children. You always have to ask, protect them from what? Protect them from failing at a test at school? Protect them from getting a less than A grade in a science project? Are those protections really necessary, or is it hindering their belief in themselves and their confidence level and their resiliency factor to overcome real challenges?
And what's the third part of the triad now?
The third part of the cognitive triad is our expectations and perception of our future. If I don't feel that I have the resiliency and the strength, and I feel like that the world should accommodate to my needs, and both of those are unrealistic, guess what that will do to that third factor of your expectations of the future? It's also going to distort that, right? I mean, even if you ask the generation today, what do you feel about your future? Many of them will say that's very bleak. We don't have enough jobs. Their education level is just getting them into entry-level job. If you want to have a quality employment, you're going to need to go into higher education. The youths today feel like that their futures are also very bleak. And therefore, you have three factors: their perception and expectations of themselves, their perceptions of expectations of the world, and their expectations and perceptions of their future that are all either distorted or negative. No wonder they're anxious and depressed.
So this brings up that controversial word, perfectionism. Can you tell me what your meaning of it and how it sort of pertains to American teens today?
Perfectionism is just that. It's my perception that everything needs to be perfect or my life will go to hell. That I need to look perfect. I need to perform perfect. I need to look perfectly, as my husband will correct me. I need to perform perfectly. I need to do everything perfectly, because if I don't, then my life will be a failure. I will not get the job. I will not get the college. I will not get the girlfriend.
It's almost like life is they're walking on a balance beam and it's very, very narrow and they have to do things in a very specific way or else they're going to fall off and it's going to be a big disaster.
Yeah. If I'm to visualize it, it will look like a tightrope.
So what do you say to a kid that feels this way? How do you overcome that?
Well, I think it depends on how old the kid is. However, more importantly, what do you say to parents who are parenting these kids? I think it's important, again, here to allow children the opportunity to experience failure, because that's what it is. It's these kids with perfectionism are fearing failure. And if they have had the opportunities to fail and were able to get back on their feet from failure, then that builds their character, that builds their resiliency factor, that builds their strength. And the more they have these experiences, we call them exposures, the more they understand, oh, well, it's actually not so bad to fail as long as I learn from it and as long as I'm able to get back on my feet.
One of the things we hear from parents here a lot, though, is that a lot of these UC schools, for instance, you know, they require basically like a 4.0 average just to get in. So there's really almost no room to get anything less than an A.
And there you go. Again, we're talking about expectations, right? So imagine this, because when you said that, there's just this picture in my mind. Do we actually have kids who are doing the work, or do we have parents who are doing the work? Maybe it's the parents who are earning these 4.0 GPA for their kids, and yet it's just their kids showing up. That seems to be what's going on a lot in these private schools.
So you're saying they have tutors or helpers, the parents are doing some of the work, because how else could someone literally get a 4.0, which means almost making no mistakes?
That's right. As far as I'm concerned, so many of the parents that I work with here at the Renewed Freedom Center, if their child has this issue, oh, we'll get a tutor for this. If their child has that challenge, oh, we'll get help with that. And when we do this, when we are constantly providing these resources to our children, number one, it's not like they're dumb. They know that they're not doing it on their own. Number two, it doesn't teach them the skill of failure, the art of failure. That failing is okay as long as you learn from it and learn how to get back up. And number three, what it models to the children is the world will accommodate me. I just need to have this deficiency, for lack of a better word, and the world will accommodate me. So what does that do for their expectations, for the kids' expectations? It's completely distorted when you compare it to the real world, what happens in the real world. And if you have all of these parents who are engaged in the work for their children or other adults who are facilitating the work for the children, then are the kids really the ones getting 4.0? And how distorted are the 4.0s in the private schools?
If some parent is listening to this and they're saying, great, Dr. Yep, I agree with you. I don't want my kid to be an anxious mess by the time he gets to college. What can they do to ensure that that doesn't happen?
Well, I think the first thing that you have to do is you have to take a step back. You have to take a step back and let your child be a child. So many of our kids today are forced to grow up and be adults. I mean, geez, we have so many years to be adults, right? As soon as you're 18, you're an adult, even though you may not be emotionally or mentally prepared to be an adult. However, legally, you're an adult with a lot of adult responsibilities. These kids only have 18 years to be children. Let them be children. Let them enjoy their childhood. Let them experience childhood as it's supposed to be, rather than the pressures of adulthood. So in theory, that's what it means. In practicality, that means take a step back. Let your child fail. Let your child complete his or her own work. If your child doesn't understand something or, you know, is having some sort of skills that need to be improved, okay, it doesn't hurt to get one tutor. However, getting 2, 3, 4, 5 different coaches and tutors for various different areas is excessive. Give your children free time to do nothing. You don't have to pack your children's schedule with activities after activities after activities. That in itself is overwhelming. Just thinking about it to me is overwhelming. So imagine an 8-year-old having to go from one activity to the next, to the next, to the next, because parents today feel like there's something wrong with their kids if they're bored. There's absolutely nothing wrong with being bored. Being bored allows you the mental space to be creative and imaginative.
I think this is a really tough message, because keeping their kids busy and active and seemingly moving towards some goal seems very congruent with most of these parents' values.
Well, what are the values? Maybe there needs to be an adjustment in what the values are. Again, the question is, what is the purpose of the values? Is the purpose for yourself? Is the purpose to be competitive with your next door neighbor? Is the purpose to go to Harvard University? Or is your purpose for whatever is best for your child? Ask your child, is this what you want? I wonder, though, how many children actually get asked, do I really want to be in this activity? Do I really want to go into this hobby? Or are they just kind of shoved into the activity?
Or at this point, do they even know what they want? Because they've been forced to follow their parents' path for so long.
And that is a huge problem. When children become teenagers, the goal of the teenage years is to find their identity. And when they have spent all their childhood being told what to do, how to do, when to do what, they have no experience and ability to make quality decisions for themselves. So many times I have had parents come here and I have had to ask them to take a step back. And of course, out of their own fears and their own insecurities, some parents have a hard time doing that. And then what ends up happening is when the kids become teenagers and go off to high school, guess what? I see the kids back here at the Renewed Freedom Center. Because now they are completely anxious because they don't have the skills mentally and emotionally to deal with the real challenges of high school. And then there are teenagers today who end up dropping out of college because they don't have the belief in themselves, the confidence, the drive, the determination to be responsible for the things needed in college.
So if we had to wrap this up in a final message here, you would say, let the kids be kids, let them fail.
Well, let the kids be kids and allow them opportunities to experience failure.
That's all the time we have today. You've been listening to the Stressless Life podcast. Send questions, comments, or episode ideas to thestresslesslife@dryip.com. Check out our website at www.dryip.com/podcast. If you like what you've been hearing, please write us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Until next time, stay stressless.